Chapter 12, Luna City. Callie looked from the decaying plant to the mayor's desk. Jake scowled between them, and the few traces of politeness slipped from his face. Wagid shuddered. Lana bit her lip. An annoying chime echoed in the small office. Gordon's tab flashed on his forearm. "What?" he snapped, swiping his finger across it.
"Gordon!"
yelled a voice.
"There's people outside!"
The words were swimming in panic and confusion. Callie couldn't even tell if it was a man or a woman.
"What?"
repeated Gordon. He raised his arm as his gaze flitted between Wagid and Jake.
"Say again, Roshan."
"People without suits. I mean, spacesuits. There's dozens of them there at every dock."
"Lock this place down," said Jake. "Hard lock everything now."
Gordon waved at him to shut up, but his expression didn't look as self-assured anymore.
"What are you talking about?"
he asked his tab.
"There's people in nice clothes. They look like clients. Dresses and suits and... oh, hell, there's kids out there. Little kids."
"Now," echoed Callie,
"set the hard locks." "Gordon, they're working on the manual controls."
The muffled sounds of distant keystrokes and screen contacts wafted from the tab.
"The airlocks, the emergency releases, they're trying to get in."
"Hard lock," Jake snapped again. "Do it now."
"Damn it, Jake," said Lana. "You're just going to panic people." "We don't have time to argue,"
said Izmi.
"They're here."
Callie stepped behind the group of senior caretakers settling next to Tessa.
"We should get out of here."
Tessa wrinkled her brow.
"And go where? Anubis hasn't repowered, and we don't have access to the..."
"We need to warn people."
"Oh."
Tessa looked at the ongoing argument.
"I'm not sure what warning anyone is going to do if other steps aren't taken." "Is that a no?"
They slid out the door. Callie looked back and forth in the hall. She'd been so intent on listening in, blindly following Jake up to the office, she hadn't paid attention to their path from the dock.
"This way,"
Tessa said, seeing her expression. They strode down the hall, and the sound of arguing faded. They turned a corner. Callie vaguely recognized an arch flanked by some plants.
"What are we going to do?"
asked Tessa.
"Warn people one-on-one? Try to take over the public address system? Stand in the main plaza and shout?"
They came to a familiar ramp. Tessa took one wide step and slid down it. Callie went down in two long hops.
"What's breach protocol?"
she asked.
"If they get in, there'll be a breach, so that should be first priority." "People need to get to sealable areas. Homes, offices, shops, stay out of halls and plazas."
"Perfect."
"How's that perfect?"
"If that happens, it means..."
"Just tell everyone there's a potential breach. We don't need to tell them what's causing it."
"But what if they..."
"Just get them somewhere safe, Tessa."
They bounded out of Chandra Boulevard and into the main plaza. People filled the broad space. Tourists, graveside visitors, another field trip's worth of children gathered around the Armstrong tree. Callie glanced at Tessa, gestured her down toward Khonsu Boulevard, Luna City's sprawling arboretum. She took a breath, tried to calm herself, and took two big strides toward Celine Boulevard and the hotel. A cluster of tourists stood there, dressed in earth clothes, swaying in the lunar gravity with every movement of their arms or turn of their heads. She cleared her throat.
"Folks," she said, "there's been a potential breach. We need you to head back to your rooms."
A murmur of panic slithered through the crowd.
"Is it bad?"
"How potential?"
"I don't have all the details," Callie said. "Sorry, we just need you to head back to your room until the all-clear sounds."
The panic became grumbling about poor safety standards, inconveniences, and refunds. The crowd shuffled off toward the hotel. The field trip closer to the Armstrong tree was even easier. The teacher listened, nodded, and started corralling kids. The ones who'd heard her warning sent nervous glances at the docking hall doors and up at the dome. Her tab chimed.
"Callie," said Wagid's voice, "where'd you and Tessa go?"
"We're in the plaza. We're trying to get people somewhere safe, out of the open."
Good call. Jake had the same thought. He's headed your way. His voice dropped. The words softened.
I think Lana's finally convinced what she needs to do, but she just doesn't want to admit it.
What did it take?
Roshan, Gordon's deputy, he sent the video feeds from outside up here for us to see.
That's good, I guess.
Hang on a second. She approached another group, a mismatched quintet of people who seemed to have drifted together.
Folks, we've got a potential breach. We need for everybody to head back to their rooms or a designated safe area.
Is this going to mess up the shuttle schedule?
Asked a woman in a slick business suit.
I'm supposed to be leaving tonight.
I don't know, Callie said. For now, we just need everyone to...
Isn't that a caretaker's uniform?
The questioning guy looked her up and down, checking out more than just her jumpsuit. His hair zigzagged up like a lightning bolt, one of those special low-gravity arrangements. An over-wide tie, almost a narrow bib of red silk, covered his chest.
Why are you the one warning us about a breach?
She organized her thoughts. Sheriff Gordon's asked all of us to help out when we're here. He shorthanded this rotation.
The tie guy glanced up at the plaza's domed ceiling.
So shorthanded the PA system doesn't work?
Callie made a point of ignoring him.
If you could all just get to your rooms, there should be an announcement soon.
Where's the breach?
Asked tie guy.
What does that matter?
Asked an older woman.
I just want to be sure my room isn't near the dangerous potential breach, he smiled, proud of himself for being clever. Maybe I should go to a shop or somewhere else.
That's a good point, said a grandfatherly man. Where should we be headed?
They all looked at her. Callie cleared her throat.
I don't have any specifics, she told them. I just know everybody needs to...
It's a joke,
Ty Guy said, his voice bright and sharp. Callie scowled.
It's not a joke.
The grandfather blinked twice behind his spectacles.
A what?
Caretakers are always doing practical jokes. I had a great uncle who was one for a couple of rotations. It's one of the ways they deal with stress.
The businesswoman's face got hard.
If I'd missed my shuttle because of some stupid joke, I would have sued. You, your boss, even Discorp. I've got a major meet,
I can assure you,
Callie said, her palms up and out.
This isn't a joke. Please, you all need to...
It's a joke,
Ty Guy told everyone confidently. Then he caught her eye and winked in a way Callie knew too well. He thought he was being funny, that this was somehow cute. He thought they were flirting. She wondered how high he'd go if she kicked him hard between the... A sharp howl cut off any more thoughts or comments. Wind dragged across the sharp corner of a building. A breeze picked up, gaining strength, as alarms went off and red lights flashed. The rush of air got faster, tugged at Callie's hair, her collar, and then vanished with a heavy, distant thump. The grandfather blinked again.
Was that
a breach? Said Tie Guy. The wind had toppled his lightning bolt hair sculpture, as well as draining most of his color and confidence. The businesswoman's eyes opened wide.
You said it was a...
Another shriek, and the air rushed back the other way. Callie felt it drag across her eyes this time, felt it rush out between her lips before she squeezed them shut. One more distant thump. Another emergency lock sealing. The alarms howled at a slightly different pitch. She was hearing them through thinner air. Something small and black dropped past Callie's face. Something else tapped her shoulder. The black, slimy thing could have been wadded-up paper, or... More leaves dropped from the Armstrong tree in a slow, dark rain. One of its branches withered and sagged as its bark faded to a dry, dusty gray. Around the huge tree's base, the grove of plants and greenery withered. Whispers and murmurs grew quickly in the huge dome of the plaza, blossoming into nervous chatter and panicked words. Callie looked around, found Tessa over by the big arch of Gleety Boulevard. The other woman stared back at her with wide eyes.
"Get somewhere safe," Callie told the group of tourists. "Hurry."
She ran to join Tessa without waiting to see if they listened to her.
"They got the docks open,"
said Tessa.
"At least two. Could they have gotten inside?" "Maybe."
Tessa gazed at the nearby entrance to Tereshkova Avenue, the only docking hallway without a red beacon flashing above it.
"The emergency seals are fast, but they're not super fast. The goal isn't to shear off someone's arm or leg if it can be avoided. So they could have gotten in. Maybe? I don't know."
Across the plaza, Jake bounded out of Chandra Boulevard, found them, and leaped across the lunar cobblestones.
"Was that a breach?"
Callie nodded at the warning lights.
"Two of them."
"Fuck. Did they get in?"
"We don't know."
"We need to know," he said, pointing at the far docking hallway. "We're going to have to split up. Callie, you head down Aldrin. I'll take Gagarin. If you see any—"
A scream echoed across the plaza. A tall, thin white man in a dark suit had stumbled out of Gagarin Avenue. Sweat ran down his face and slicked his hair against his head. A stocky, bald man in a robe and a woman in a shapeless dress of gray gauze flanked him. No, not a dress. Callie had seen those lines so often lately. The funeral shroud looked just as familiar as a dress. The three corpses lumbered forward. Despite the warnings and the breaches, it didn't look like anyone had actually left the plaza. No matter what, since the dawn of time, human nature made some people stop to look when they should be running. Jake charged forward, the room blurred around Callie as the zombies swelled in her view. Her legs knew the moves they had to make without her thinking about it. The stocky dead man grabbed a teenager by the arm, yanked, and slammed her face first into the wall next to the Gagarin Avenue arch. The dazed girl, probably another tourist, judging by her clothes and hair, hit the lunacrete with a crunch and left a splash of red. Her head sagged, her shoulders went limp, and the dead man smashed her head into the wall again before letting the body drop and turning to look at Callie. The details of his eyes ran together into gray smears. Beads of water condensed and glistened on the hard flesh, and it made Callie think of rain on statues. It turned the dust on his fine clothes into mud. She rammed into him, arms out, pushing him back. The blow knocked him off his feet and sent him back into the wall. He crashed against the lunacrete less than a meter from the red stain the teenager had left. Callie leaped up and shoved him back again with all her strength. The dead man slid to the ground and reached for her ankles. She lifted her knee up and brought her heel down on the dead man's grasping hands. His knuckles made a noise like breaking ice. She stomped down again, aiming at his wrist, and the impact made her hop up into the air, away from the figure she'd been brutalizing. The girl on the floor twitched once. Blood seeped out around her head, making little streams between the cobblestones. Her fingertips flexed on the uneven stones. A scream came from behind her, heavy sounds of meat hitting meat, more sounds of ice and wood breaking. The dead man pushed himself up on the crushed fingers, crawled back up onto all fours. It wasn't a person, she told herself, just a dead body. She'd handled hundreds of them in the past few weeks. Callie stepped to the side and snapped her foot out. A perfect grand battement that caught the corpse in the side of the head and twisted its skull around. The impact dropped it to the floor, and she brought the heel of her boot down hard on its head. The rubber sole absorbed a lot of the impact, but it still smashed the zombie's face against the floor. She stomped down again and again. The head crunched on the cobblestones each time. On the fifth, it went limp and slumped on the floor. The teenaged girl's body twitched again. Callie's blood sped out to her fingers and toes, raced back to her heart. It moved too fast for her to slow down. She twisted around, looking for more threats. The woman in the shroud hit the ground a few meters away, and Jake stomped hard on her chest. Bones cracked under his heel. The dead woman kept moving, kept reaching for him with an arm that twisted unnaturally at the shoulder. He shifted targets, brought his boot down again, and two hard, wooden noises echoed across the plaza before another crack stopped the dead thing's movement. A wet, gurgling sound rippled through the air. Callie turned and saw the tall man, gnarled fingers wrapped around a woman's neck, the angry woman in the business suit. Her hands flailed at the dead man's arms, even as its thumbs pressed in on her throat and its wrists twisted. Callie tackled the zombie, her arms around its waist. Jake hit it a moment later, driving an uppercut into its jaw as the tall corpse fell. Callie took it to the floor, and it dragged the businesswoman with them, never releasing its grip. Jake kicked it in the face. The businesswoman's desperate eyes found Callie's. They lost focus and drifted away. The woman let out a weak, rattling sigh. The dead man let go of her throat.
"Move,"
said Jake. Callie rolled to the side, and Jake dragged the tall man away by his coat. A few meters away, he shifted his grip and smashed the dead man's face into the floor three times. The zombie blindly pawed at his boots, and Jake slammed its skull against the cobblestones again. Someone shrieked, followed by a deep breath and another shrill scream. Callie looked around and found Thai Guy shrieking through his fingers. A woman sobbed. A flabby man stabbed a finger in Jake's direction, then another one at the dead woman in the shroud.
"You killed her! You kicked her head in!"
"She was already dead!"
"You killed her!"
shouted the man again. Jake scowled and waved a dismissive hand at the man. Another shriek from across the plaza, past the withering Armstrong tree. A man had two children, one in each hand. Tessa tried to pull one of the children away, but it ignored it. Callie looked again. The children had the man, a prospector by the look of his jumpsuit. A dead girl wore a dirty sarong with a collection of beads around her neck. The white boy in a little blue suit clawed at the man's forearm like a cat climbing a tree. Tessa pulled at the girl again and managed to get her away from the prospector. The girl turned and swiped at her. Tessa leaped back and shot a quick glance toward Callie and Jake. Callie's legs shoved down at the cobblestones and launched her across the plaza. The dead boy crawled up the prospector, snatched something from his tool belt, and thrust it into the man's left eye. It pulled back, wet and glistening, and plunged into his other eye. The little zombie left it in the socket and forced a tiny fist between the man's lips. Callie misjudged her last leap and slipped past the prospector. In the corner of her eye, she saw Tessa kick the dead girl in the chest and send her sprawling. The prospector dropped to his knees, flailing at the little boy. Callie caught herself, turned, looked. The dead girl struggled back to her feet. The dead boy had buried his arm up to the elbow in the older man's throat. The prospector made weak, gagging noises as he tried to suck in air. She grabbed the boy and pulled. The dead child twisted in her grip. Tessa lunged forward and wrapped her arms around the prospector's belly, pulling him back. The dead boy's arm slid out between the prospector's teeth. Bright red blood coated his wrist and hand. He clutched something wet and meaty in his fingers. The prospector coughed, spit up a mouthful of blood that cascaded down his chin, and fell over. The screwdriver stood at attention in the ruined mess of his eye. Callie shifted her hips, twisted, and threw the zombie child as far as she could. He tumbled a few meters through the air and collapsed in the rotted remains of the central garden. A moment later, he staggered to his feet. She didn't think. The dead prospector had an oversized wrench hanging from his belt, almost half a meter of stainless steel with a universal hex on one end and a double-pronged claw on the other. It fit between her fingers like it had been made for her. Callie swung the wrench and caught the dead girl across the side of its head. She ignored the crunching sensation that traveled up into her hand and swung again, smashing the length of steel into the zombie's forehead. A third hit drove the small corpse down to the cobblestones, and it stopped moving when its skull caved in on the fourth. The dead boy lurched toward them. Callie stood, raised the wrench, and brought its clawed end down on the boy's head. The zombie's scalp split open, and it swayed under the impact. He took another staggering step forward, and she slammed the tool down again. The wrench swung and caught the dead boy under its chin. Its jaw crumpled, and the impact lifted the zombie off its feet. It glided back, struck the wall, and slid to the floor. A shiver raced through Callie as the adrenaline in her system finally began to ebb. She sucked in a deep breath. Across the plaza, the tourist still shrieked at Jake. Jake continued to ignore the man. He gazed across the plaza at Callie. Shocked by her violence? Impressed or embarrassed by her skill with the wrench? She looked at the wrench. No blood. She'd beaten two children to death with it, and it didn't have any blood. She hadn't really beaten them to death, though. Another shriek. Why were there still so many people in the plaza? Did everyone have a death wish? A second and third scream echoed across the dome. 2 meters behind Jake, the businesswoman crawled to her feet. Her head hung at an odd angle. She turned and took a staggering step toward the closest tourist, then another. Momentum helped her pick up speed, moving like the bulky suited astronauts from 20th century space footage. Callie pointed with the wrench. Jake turned, saw. He leaped after the woman. Callie walked over to the dead prospector. Blood with cloudy swirls filled both eye sockets. More had poured from his mouth after he'd fallen, and even a few thin streamers from his nose. She tapped him in the shoulder with her toe. Not quite a kick. His hand flinched. His body jerked twice, then again, like electrical convulsions. His left foot began to tremble. Her mind conjured the image of the big gravedigger starting back up after hours of inactivity. Gordon's voice burst from hidden speakers, asking people to go to homes, rooms, or places of business and make sure they were secure. It had the tinny edge of a recording. Callie only half listened as the sheriff mentioned a pair of breeches. Tessa crept up on the other side of the prospector.
Is he alive? Should we call someone, the hospital or emergency services, or... I don't think so.
The prospector lurched up, rolling over onto his hands and knees. The screwdriver in his eye socket bobbed up and down like a thick, stubby antennae on a snail. One push carried the dead man back to his feet. A few more threads of blood twisted off his lips and into the air. His arm swung out, and his fingers closed on Tessa's forearm. She shook him off and hopped away. The dead man slid one of his legs forward and lurched after her. Without the rush of adrenaline, it took a few quick breaths for Callie to raise the wrench and bring it down. The claw struck the man's scalp and blood oozed from the gash. He staggered under the blow, then took another step toward Tessa. She slammed the wrench down 3 more times. On the third blow, the prospector's skull shifted and sagged. On the fourth, the dead man twitched once and then collapsed onto the cobblestones. The screwdriver hit with a hard clack. More screams echoed across the plaza's big dome. Callie took a deep breath. She looked at Tessa.
Are you okay?
Yes.
Tessa rubbed her arm where the prospector had grabbed her.
He didn't break the skin, or even touch the skin. My skin, I mean.
Callie nodded. A tremor worked its way through her body, making it hard to hold the wrench. She shoved it into her hip pocket. Tessa's eyes darted back and forth between the two dead children.
Do you think? Will they get up again? I don't know.
She found Jake again across the way. He moved hesitantly back toward Gagarin, where a teenaged girl with a broken and bloody face stumbled to meet him. He slid something from his back pocket and flicked his wrist. The object snapped out, forming a rod almost half a meter long. Jake whipped it 3 times back and forth like swatting at a fly, and the zombie slumped back to the floor. Jake stared at the body. Then he shook his head, found Callie's eyes, and gave a come-here gesture. The baton collapsed as he walked, and he stuffed it back into his pocket. They met under the withered branches of the Armstrong tree. Black, wet leaves painted the cobblestones under their boots.
"Think that's it," he said. 3 from Gagarin, 2 from Aldrin.
Callie nodded.
I didn't see any others. Plus, Tessa swallowed, plus they killed 3 other people.
Deep breaths, Jake told her.
You're a caretaker, right? Death's not a big thing.
She gave two quick, fierce nods, then shook her head.
Dead people aren't the same as people getting killed.
Jake took a deep breath of his own.
No, he agreed. No, it's not.
We need to get everyone out of here,
Callie said. Or get all the bodies into the avenues. Both, really.
Why?
Because we don't know if whatever's doing this is spread by touch or if it's airborne or some kind of radiation or what. All we know is they wake up fast.
She cast her hand at the bodies.
Megan and the others back at Osiris. These people here. It only took them 5 or 6 minutes to get back up, right? Not even that long,
said Tessa. Jake looked at the bodies in the plaza.
Shit.
Tessa fidgeted with the cuff of her jumpsuit while she stared at the dead businesswoman.
It's going across the surface of the moon so we can probably write off airborne, and the clients are reanimating in their graves underground, so touch probably isn't it either.
So most likely radiation, Jake said, which still means the avenues are the best place for them.
Tessa, Callie said, get everyone else out of here. How?
Be yourself, said Jake. No excuses, take no shit, hit them with every rule and regulation you can quote.
Tessa managed a tight grin. She turned and strode toward Ty Guy, who was frozen in horror near the withered remains of the Armstrong tree.
We've got to be quick, Callie told Jake. Drag as many as we can into the hall and seal them in.
You in charge now?
Just thinking out loud.
Hey, as long as one of us is thinking.
They moved to the bodies near Gagarin. Callie hooked her hands under the dead teenager's arms and tried not to look at her ruined face. In the low gravity, she barely weighed anything. Jake grabbed a dead man's wrist, straightened up, and hauled him toward the docking avenue archway.
Hey! Shouted a flabby man over by the hotel. You shouldn't move those people. They need medical attention.
Callie lifted the dead girl almost upright. Then came the awkward dance as mass and gravity fought it out. Jake probably had the right idea, dragging the body, but it was too late now. She could imagine how the remaining tourists would react if she just dropped the teenager. Jake emerged from the hallway and stepped past her. Callie walked the small body back into the cool, sterile avenue and let it slide off her arms onto the floor. She turned back to the door, and Jake had already dragged the body of the tall, dead man to the hallway. Callie stepped past him. The last corpse was the dead woman in the shroud. Callie grabbed the woman's wrist and heaved. The body slid over the cobblestones. Tremors worked their way up into Callie's forearms. She heaved again, and the lunar gravity bounced the corpse into the air. A hard yank brought it through the archway and into the avenue. It hit the floor and slid into the stocky man, the first one Callie had put down. Jake set a hand on her shoulder and guided her out of the doorway. He flipped up the emergency cover and smacked the plump red button beneath it. The doors of Gagarin Avenue hissed shut, their central seal spun and locked. She shrugged his hand away.
Other side of the plaza, she said. Three more over there.
They crossed back under the withered tree. Jake grabbed the dead prospector and pulled him into Aldrin Avenue. The screwdriver in the man's eye clicked as he slid over the cobblestones. Callie grabbed the little boy with the bloody hand, bunching up his lapels in her fists. She saw how close her wrists rested to his teeth and shifted her grip to his shoulders. His heels bounced like half-filled balloons. Jake had already dumped the prospector's body inside the archway. He looked past Callie to the little girl in the sarong.
You got the last one?
Callie dragged the dead boy through the arch.
You can't handle a little kid?
Jake's mouth pressed flat, and he gave her a sharp nod. She set the body down next to the prospector. When she stepped back into the plaza, Tessa bounded toward her. Wagid followed right behind. He gazed at Jake hefting the dead girl, at the streaks and streams of blood decorating the cobblestones.
You both okay?
Callie looked down at the blood, felt the weight of the wrench in her pocket, and shrugged. Jake stepped out of Aldrin and sealed the door.
We're both fine.
Is that all of them?
Think so.
Pretty sure the only two breaches were Aldrin and Gagarin, said Callie. I didn't hear any others.
Wagid looked back down at the blood.
They were the only two the system reported. We're probably safe saying these were the only ones that got in.
Don't want to just say it, boss, said Jake. Want to know they're the only ones that got in.
Tessa's eyes went wide behind her glasses.
Oh, no.
She turned, looked past the Armstrong tree, across the plaza toward Chandra Boulevard.
No, 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 no.
Callie followed her gaze and saw nothing.
What? The mortuary.